Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Thanks for checking in. We've got a lot on our plate today. We'll begin in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Nine soldiers killed last night when two Black Hawk helicopters collided during a military training exercise. That's home base for the Army's 101st Airborne Division.
The Army has deployed an aircraft safety team who will arrive later today and will immediately initiate an investigation to help us understand what caused this crash in order to prevent accidents like this from happening again.
A spokesperson for the Army at a news conference this morning, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear.
We are blessed to live in the freest country in the history of planet Earth, but we must remember that that freedom relies on those who are willing to serve, some of which pay the ultimate price.
The crash happened in an open field around 10 o'clock last night. Police say the manifesto written by the Nashville school shooter will be made public. It could provide a motive for Monday's massacre.
I think the families need to know what was going on in the mindset of this person.
Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett says the trans shooter was being treated for an emotional disorder.
There was a mental issue there, and in this country, we're a sick nation. We need to repent, and honestly, we need a revival. It's made a lot of people mad that I've said that, but the people doing the praying aren't the ones doing the shooting.
Last night, mourners gathered in the Music City to remember the victims of the Christian school shooting.
I lift my voice up into Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville turned to what it's best known for, music.
There's a banner. Hold on,
in hopes of healing after unfathomable tragedy.
You can feel the sadness in the city right now. It's really overwhelming.
City leaders, victims' families, and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden gathering to mourn the six lives lost.
Janet Chamblian reporting from Nashville. Three adults and three children murdered by the 28-year-old shooter who once attended that school. The White House using the tragedy to lobby for more gun control. Presidential spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre.
These are weapons of war that are in our schools, that are in our communities, that are in our churches, in our places of worship. That is not what it's supposed to be. Congress needs to take action.
Tomorrow, the first of six funerals gets underway. The 9-year-old who tried to pull the fire alarm to warn her classmates about the attack will be laid to rest. An American reporter for the Wall Street Journal is being detained in Russia. 31-year-old journalist Evan Gershkovich has been charged with espionage. The Kremlin says the New Jersey native was collecting state secrets for the U.S. government. That charge carries a 20-year prison term. The Wall Street Journal demanding the immediate release of that reporter. 86-year-old Pope Francis in the hospital with a lung infection. The Vatican calls it respiratory discomfort. NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres.
This is the kind of condition that at his age, it can be a critical condition. And I think that's why they have him in the hospital, just to treat him and to also monitor him.
Dave Gibson is the director of Fordham University's Center on Religion.
There's a saying in Rome that a pope is never sick until he's dead, which means that the Vatican has a history of not really telling you the full truth.
Gibson says any papal illness is always unsettling, but especially now with Holy Week just around the corner.
This is the most intense stretch, really, of the liturgical calendar.
The Pope said in the past that he would resign if he wasn't healthy like his predecessor, but Gibson notes that Francis is starting to change his tune.
Recently, he's been saying, look, resignation is always possible, but this should be a job for life. That's the tradition, and that's what he's aiming for.
This month marks 10 years since Francis took over for Pope Benedict, who stepped down, citing failing health and the pressures of the job. Communist China is threatening to fight back if House Speaker Kevin McCarthy meets with the president of Taiwan, who arrived in the U.S. Wednesday. That 10-day trip will end in McCarthy's home state of California. Florida Senator Marco Rubio says China and the U.S. are in a cold war. No doubt about it.
It's been about 30 years since there was another superpower on the earth that was in conflict with the United States, and we are back in that place, and we need to stop pretending like that's not the case.
Rubio says there's no threat greater to the U.S. right right now than communist China. A House panel hearing testimony today from three attorneys general on government efforts to censor conservatives. They accuse the White House of colluding with big tech to suppress information about the Hunter Biden laptop scandal, as well as the origins of COVID-19. The U.S. Senate has voted to end the national COVID emergency.
The GOP resolution was passed 68-23 to end the national emergency that's been in place since 2020. The bill is now on the way to the desk of President Biden. The president, who threatened to veto the measure twice in months past, now says he'll sign the bill, as the administration was already planning to end the emergency declaration on May 11th.
A freight train derailed today about 100 miles west of Minneapolis. 22 cars leapt the tracks. That rail disaster led to evacuations in the area. It's opening day in Major League Baseball.
It's the same game that's made it America's pastime. But a brand new playing field for Major League Baseball.
Correspondent Sam Brock.
Maybe the most exciting development for baseball this year, a bump in the pace of play. For the first time, a pitch clock will be introduced. It's part of a slew of new rules meant to speed things up and add offense.
All 30 teams in action today. Will have more on opening day coming up. Also ahead, tale of the tape, why a police chief was fired, Fetterman's return to Capitol Hill, and DeMar Hamlin is back in the news. We'll tell you why after this.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams. Cold day underway. Warmer weather heads our way toward the weekend, but so does wind and some wet weather come our way. Forecast details are up in 10.
All right, we'll see you then. Thanks, Kevin. The scheduled release of a convicted killer has led to an outpour of outrage in Western New York. Edward Kint was just 15 when he sexually assaulted and murdered Penny Brown of Salamanca on a walking trail. Today, he's the same age she was then, 39. The crime happened in 1999. Brown's daughter, Caitlin, was just a baby when she lost her mom on Mother's Day 24 years ago.
We have been failed tremendously. It seems like the priority is the freedom of the criminal actually over the victim.
State Senator George Borrello says Kint's behavior behind bars makes him unfit for release.
He committed lewd acts, exposed himself to women, fashioned weapons, was caught with drugs and alcohol inside prison. If this is what he's doing in a maximum security prison, imagine what he will do when he's free on the streets.
Penny Brown's killer was scheduled to be let go from the Elmira Correctional Facility yesterday, but that release was delayed. The city of Elmira has released the body cam video from a December 9th arrest that led to the firing of Police Chief Anthony Alvarez. That video shows the ex-cop in an unmarked car driving over the sidewalk in an attempt to subdue a suspect. City leaders say the chief was let go because his actions were unprofessional. Alvarez says due to pending litigation, he can't talk about the case. You can watch the police body cam video for yourself at MyTwinTears.com. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman will return to work in April, 2 months after checking himself into the hospital with clinical depression. The 53-year-old suffered a stroke last spring.
He's been in the hospital now for more than 40 days. The typical inpatient treatment for those suffering severe depression is about 6 days. So this is indicative of a very significant and severe problem.
Michael Gear at the Pennsylvania Family Institute wonders if voters are having buyer's remorse when it comes to Fetterman.
There are questions about his ability to even carry out the job before the depression came along with the effects of his stroke. So I think lots of Pennsylvanians are saying maybe it's time for him to resign and to find a replacement.
Fetterman will return to work on Capitol Hill the week of April 17th. A local high school baseball coach says he is looking forward to the new rules in big league baseball this year.
I think that the rules could have an interesting impact. I think it's aimed at trying to help batters increase their batting average. We'll see how it goes. The bigger bases, hopefully, maybe get a little bit more action on the bases when it comes to stealing.
Jeremy Austin coaches baseball at Corning High School in Corning, New York.
The pitch clock is just to try to increase the speed of it. It'll be interesting, and hopefully it'll give us a little bit more action-packed game.
He thinks the new rules will resurrect elements of the game that have gone out the window in recent years, like bunting or the hit and run.
For me, that's kind of the thrill of the game is all that small ball and the strategy behind it and trying to beat the other team tactically.
The Corning coach says he doesn't like the rule this year that limits the number of pickoff attempts a pitcher can make during an at-bat. New York is getting $100 million to help close the digital divide. That money from the American Rescue Plan will help connect 100,000 households to affordable, high-speed internet. In an effort to attract more educators to the classroom, Pennsylvania may soon pay student teachers. The Commonwealth is reeling from a severe teacher shortage. Democratic State Senator Vincent Hughes.
To get certified to be a teacher in Pennsylvania, you've got to do about 12 or 13 weeks of student teaching. So we've got to provide some financial support for those individuals who are on this path.
Hughes says student teachers need to be compensated through a stipend program, and that will alleviate the overall teacher shortage crisis. School choice activists in New York are applauding a recent ruling that protects private schools from government overreach. I spoke about it today with Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedom. Jason, a judge last week reined in the reach of New York's power to regulate faith-based schools. This impacts some 1,800 private schools in New York. If you would explain this decision and the impact it has on private and parochial education.
Well, listeners may recall that the State Education Department put out some regulations regarding substantial equivalency diplomas, or SED regulations. That really puts the screws on private schools across the state as far as having to be accountable to either the local district or some kind of enforcement mechanism if they were not meeting state standards. Well, the good news is that the court has now ruled this is the responsibility of the parents. And so the state can't really discipline the school for maybe not meeting all of the SED regulations because parents can get that other educational format through studies at home or other opportunities. So I'm encouraged that this decision really put education back in the seat of parents.
Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Multiple schools in Pennsylvania were the target of what police are calling computer-generated swatting calls. Those hoax calls claimed there was an active shooter situation. Pittsburgh Police Chief Thomas Stangrecki.
At this point, there is no indication that there ever was an active shooter, and there was no injuries.
30 schools in Massachusetts also received the computer-generated hoax phone calls. Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin is bringing the story of his remarkable recovery to our nation's capital. Yesterday, he introduced a bill on Capitol Hill that expands access to AED devices in schools nationwide. He spoke to a group of athletic trainers.
I'm humbled beyond words to be here to support each of you and the work that you have been doing to save lives.
Hamlin was saved by CPR and defibrillation after suffering cardiac arrest on the field during a Monday night football game in January. The athletic trainer who performed that life-saving CPR, Bills trainer Denny Kellington, was honored yesterday at the New York State Capitol. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Let's check sports next. It is opening day, folks, for Major League Baseball. There are new rules in place. For starters, the bases are larger this year. But there are other curveballs to consider, says correspondent Steve Futterman.
The changes include greatly limiting infield shifts. No longer will all infielders be able to move to one side. Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred says the league is responding to fans.
They wanted a game with more action, better pace.
The other major change is the pitch clock. Pitchers will now have 15 to 20 seconds to throw the ball, depending on whether there's a base runner. It will likely reduce game times by 20 to 30 minutes. The new rules have been used in preseason games, and they are working. L.A. Dodger pitcher Clayton Kershaw.
It's getting what we want. The game today was 2 hours and whatever minutes.
The L.A. Angels' Mike Trout also likes the new rules.
You're not waiting around, a lot of action, and yeah, I like it.
As for the fans, some approve.
I actually do like it.
And some don't.
It's too fast.
It's too fast.
Steve Futterman, Los Angeles.
All right, Steve, thank you. For the first time since 1968, all 30 teams are in action on opening day. The Yankees host the Giants at the stadium this afternoon. The Mets in Miami. Phillies on the road in Texas, while the Pirates are at Cincy. The Kings are headed to the NBA playoffs for the first time since 2006. Sacramento ending its historic 16-year drought with a win over the Trailblazers. The Kings had the longest postseason drought of any U.S. professional sports franchise. The NIT championship is tonight in Las Vegas. The University of Alabama at Birmingham takes on North Texas in a matchup of two Conference USA teams. Marks just the fourth time ever that the NIT title game has featured two teams from the same conference. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. Still to come on the Noon Report for Thursday, prayers for the Pope, mourning in the Music City, and reporter arrested in Russia.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. In the biblical account of the Tower of Babel, God states, after examining humanity's ambitious but misguided building project, that, quote, nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them, end quote. That was his reason for confusing their languages and halting their project. It wasn't because he was angry. Rather, God states that working together like that, humans could achieve, at least here on Earth, a sort of godlike power. Things that seem impossible can become impossible. And, for fallen people at least, that's a real problem. I immediately thought of this Babel story, like I do a lot these days, when I saw headlines this month about a team of scientists that have created living baby mice using two biological fathers. The Japanese team behind this seemingly impossible feat described their work recently in the journal Nature. After harvesting skin cells from the tails of two male mice, they converted these cells to what are known as induced pluripotent stem cells. These are cells that are able to differentiate into any type of tissue in the body. The scientists treated these stem cells with a drug that transformed them into female cells. These, in turn, produce functional eggs, which the team fertilized and implanted into female mice. Eventually, after a 99% failure rate, that seems important, these pregnancies resulted in a few live mice pups that had two genetic fathers and no mother. As the Associated Press put it, saying the quiet part out loud, quote, this raises the distant possibility of using the same technique for people. On a moment like this, it's tempting to quote the late science fiction author Michael Crichton, or at least the film adaptation of his novel Jurassic Park. If you remember, in that movie, Jeff Goldblum's character famously says this, quote, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. His point is simply that science can only answer how questions. It can never give you a why. It can discover techniques. It can never teach ethics. That doesn't mean, of course, that science or scientific breakthroughs are value neutral. In his book, The Abolition of Man, C.S. Lewis wrote these immortal lines, quote, in a sort of ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and then demand the function. We make men without chest and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and then are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful. In theory, at least, we could bring human children into existence who have no biological mothers. But should we? Are mothers incidental to the life of a child? Are they easily replaced by a second father in order to accommodate the sexual and relational wants of adults? Or are they essential? We could ask the same of fathers. In short, does human life, does the human family have a definition, an identity, a given structure? Or are these things infinitely malleable, putty in the gloved hands of scientists or policymakers so preoccupied with whether they can, they don't stop and ask if they should? By denying any God-given ought for sex and procreation, we are building a new scientific Babel. Through the shared language and technique of science, we may indeed prove that nothing is impossible for us. But as Lewis observed, we'll find along the way in the process to have engineered away our humanity, replacing the love and complementarity our biology signifies with cold, cynical technique. Lewis called these efforts the abolition of man. In light of the increasingly likely possibility of children without mothers, we may as well rename it the abolition of woman. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Outside we go next, Kevin Williams.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast for this afternoon. Bright and sunny much of the time, a few patchy clouds too. Much colder than yesterday. High temps, mid-30s to mid-40s. Tonight starts with stars. We go to clouds. Low temps, 20s and low 30s. Tomorrow, cloudy. Could be a little light snow early, especially central New York, but ultimately cloudy, breezy, milder. Occasional rain and showers. Highs in the 50s. Those winds will be quite gusty near Lake Erie later in the day and at night. And Saturday is a windy day, a warmer day with showers and rumbles. High temps, 60s and sharply colder by Saturday night.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Lots going on Thursday, the 30th of March. 9 U.S. soldiers killed overnight when 2 Black Hawk helicopters collided near Fort Campbell, Kentucky. It happened during a routine training exercise. Reporter Catherine Harris.
I think we use the words very lightly, routine exercises, but these can be very high risk, and unfortunately, we may have seen some of that risk play out last night.
Fort Campbell's home to the Army's 101st Airborne Division. For the first time since the Cold War, Russia's detained an American reporter on spying charges.
Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gerskovich is accused of acting on instructions of the U.S. government to spy on Russia's military-industrial complex and trying to obtain secret information. Held on an espionage charge, the reporter faces up to 20 years in a Russian prison. In a brief statement, his employers at the Wall Street Journal say they are deeply concerned for his safety. Gerskovich's most recent byline in the paper this week ran under the headline, Russia's economy is starting to come undone.
Pope Francis in the hospital in Rome. The 86-year-old has a respiratory infection. Reporter Keir Simmons is at the Vatican.
The Pope's health has not been robust. He used a wheelchair for over a year. More recently, he's been walking with a cane. When he was young, he had part of a lung removed due to severe pneumonia. And less than 2 years ago, he underwent major intestinal surgery.
Francis is the third oldest pope in Catholic Church history. He took over for Benedict the 16th, 10 years ago this month. A new Fox News poll shows former President Trump may be benefiting politically from news of a possible criminal indictment. The poll shows he leads the GOP presidential field in 2024 by a wide margin. Trump, in fact, has a more than 2-to-1 advantage right now over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has not yet declared his intent to run. New study shows the past decade there's been a more than 25% increase in the number of children rushed to the hospital after trying to harm themselves.
What can make this better is for there to be a greater appreciation and understanding that kids are experiencing a great amount of distress, and we have to take it seriously.
Dr. Christy Crawford is a child psychologist in Boston. Kentucky lawmakers have voted to override the governor's veto of a law that banned gender-affirming health care for trans youth. It made it so biological boys could not compete on girls' sports teams and requires students at school use bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their gender at birth. An emotional scene in Nashville last night as the Music City mourned the deaths of 6 people killed in a shooting at a Christian school. The killer, a 28-year-old transsexual and former student at that school, was being treated for an emotional disorder. This friend tells NBC News.
There's no forgiving what she did, but she obviously was not in her right mental state for a long time.
The first of 6 funerals will happen tomorrow. More on the shooting next from Gary Ingram. He is the founder of the Love and Truth Network in Glendale, Arizona. Gary specializes in treating people with gender dysphoria. Here's some of our conversation. The 28-year-old shooter at this Nashville Christian school was receiving treatment for an emotional disorder. This individual was transgender, born a biological female and identified as a male at the time of this tragedy. How much of a factor might that have been in this school shooting? I know that police are saying that this individual had resented attending that Christian school.
The thing that I have great concerns about is just the level of confusion, but also the level of anger that's being stoked by a lot of the media that I'm watching with regard to the LGBT community and really pitting Christianity against that community and vice versa, and acting as if the only way that a person can view those within the LGBT community as a Christian is either to fully embrace and celebrate all that they themselves are embracing, or that if you don't do that, then you're just a hater and a bigot. There are many in the church who really want to thread that needle well of embracing biblical truth, but loving in a really lavish way. Yeah. And so much of the narrative today doesn't seem to even allow that to happen.
Yeah, the radical transgender group, they call themselves the Trans Resistance Network. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they have put out a press release following this shooting, basically saying this person was a victim and that the shooter felt no other effective way to be seen than kill six innocent people, including 3 9-year-old children at this private Presbyterian school. But there are effective ways to deal with this, and it's not going out and shooting a bunch of kids. Your reaction to what the Trans Resistance Network has put out?
Well, I think we often talk about the need that we see for Christians in the church to separate individuals from ideology. The ideology that's out there and the rhetoric that's out there is growing in its intensity. And I think what you just expressed is representative of an extreme form of the rhetoric. But we have to remember as Christians that people within the LGBT community, most of them just kind of want to live their life. They're not activists. And we have to be careful to not respond emotionally in the same way of the negativity that's coming toward us as Christians. So we really have to learn how to diffuse this anger. But yeah, you're totally right. This stoking of the anger, this nonsense that somehow this was justifiable. But again, we as Christians, how are we going to respond both to those who truly were the victims, the families now of these little ones and these adults? How are we going to respond and love them through this? And also, how are we going to engage with the culture in a long-term view, as well as taking up the short-term needs of those who are wrestling and struggling with all forms of identity confusion and sexual brokenness?
President Biden was asked yesterday to respond to a comment made by Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who said this fits the definition of a hate crime. The president wouldn't go there. He was asked, was this a hate crime directed at Christians? Do you think this fits the definition of a hate crime?
Well, it fits the definition of a hate crime. It's in fact is determined through what this person, their writings and all the stuff that they had at home. If it's indicating that they went out and they were targeting Christians, then obviously it's a hate crime. And this idea that we somehow separate racism and bigotry and assign that to only one particular group of people, that's ridiculous. We can all be racist. We can all be bigots. And we can all be full of hate. So it's very possible. It certainly looks, by first appearance anyway, it looks as if this was motivated by hate. And if that's the case, then obviously it fits into that definition of a hate crime.
One final question, Gary, we'll let you go. The number two health official in this country, the undersecretary for the Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Rachel Levine, a transgender person, she said something profound last week, basically predicting that within her lifetime, this whole idea of gender affirming care and sexual reassignment surgery, even on minors, will be normalized in her lifetime. Do you think the doctor is correct?
Well, sure. And I think it's possible that it's correct. And for example, the man that goes by the name Dr. Rachel Levine is a guy who is a biological male who is now presenting as a female. And so it's possible that that is the case. That certainly is the direction that everything is being pushed. What I find tragic about that is that children especially are being caught in the crosshairs of this cultural moment. And children are being, their bodies are being mutilated. They are not able to really contend with the things that are before them. And it's being held out to children that you know, if you go down this process and you embrace this surgery or what have you and believe that you can be a different gender, that all your problems are solved. You know, that's the narrative that so many young people are believing. Yeah. And they go through these transitions and they've done irreversible damage to themselves. Yeah. And so I think there's going to be massive lawsuits. We'll see just whether that prediction that he is making is true.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be massive lawsuits by children who have been so badly damaged by the narrative and what's going on today that's pushing them down this conveyor belt of transition.
That is Gary Ingram. He is with the Love and Truth Network in Glendale, Arizona. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A storm system crossing the country, bringing heavy rains and snows in the west of late, will come east with a severe weather outbreak coming tomorrow in the heartland. That system promises wind and rain and a little snow to our region as we head toward the weekend. In the meantime, for this afternoon, fairly bright and sunny much of the time. A few patchy clouds, too. Much colder than yesterday. High temps, mid-30s to mid-40s. Tonight starts with stars. We go to clouds. Low temps, 20s and low 30s. Tomorrow, cloudy. Could be a little light snow early, especially central New York, but ultimately cloudy, breezy, milder. Occasional rain and showers, highs in the 50s. Those winds will get quite gusty near Lake Erie later in the day and at night. And Saturday is a windy day, a warmer day with showers and rumbles. High temp 60s, then sharply colder by Saturday night.
Okay, Kevin, thank you very much. And finally at noon, whoever said noodles are not for breakfast, well, you haven't heard this from Family Life's Brian Querrey.
In the movie Elf, Buddy ate spaghetti for breakfast, as long as it had lots of maple syrup. Well, Nissin Foods USA is taking a chance that you will like it too. The company has announced the launch of their Cup Noodles Breakfast, the first ramen product with a breakfast-inspired flavor. The new ramen will have flavors including pancakes, maple syrup, sausage, and eggs. The breakfast-flavored noodles will be ready to eat in 4 minutes, and Priscilla Stanton, Senior Vice President of Marketing for Nissin, said that the company's products are, quote, a go-to meal at any time of the day, and that Cup Noodles Breakfast will feed cravings around the clock. The noodles will be available at select Walmart stores nationwide this week, so make sure you don't miso your opportunity to get some. Brian Querrey, Family Life News.
I can't wait. Thank you, Brian. That's our world Thursday, the 30th of March. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.